and it just took off from there. I mean, you ordered 4 or 5 parks, and good Lord. And once I made those and posted about those, then it was
game over for sure.
It's game over for sure.
Welcome to USA FBL Fingerboard Podcast. I'm your host, Levine Cunningham, and I'm excited to be chatting with Dave Ware of Warehouse Ramps. Dave, thanks for coming on the podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Levine.
I'm excited. I got one of the best obstacle park makers on the cast. I mean, we haven't really had any park makers and stuff like that. So I feel like this is going to be a great episode for sure.
Well, I don't know about one of the best, but I sure have a lot of fun doing it. That's for sure.
Oh, most definitely. I know you and me got a bit of history together, and we're definitely going to talk about that a little bit here. But first off, let's tell people about you. Like, what got you into fingerboarding? How did it all start?
Well, I mean, if you take it way back, I guess, I used to, when I was, I don't know, a lot younger, this would have been probably mid-90s. I used to, make whole cardboard parks and used to make, cardboard fingerboards with pencil wheels that, they didn't turn, slid and all. But I used to do it a lot when I was little, and then hadn't thought about it at all really until 3 years ago. I'm married and have 2 little girls now, 9 and 10. And so I'm of course looking for stuff to do with them, and so we can relate to each other more. And since I have so much of a history with skateboarding and just that whole skate culture in general, I guess I thought maybe fingerboards. I'll go get some tech decks, and that'd be something that me and the girls can relate on. So I went and got some, and we did it for a couple of weeks, and and I made my first little ramp half pipe thing, and it's like, this is kind of neat, and I wonder if anybody else makes finger little skateboard ramps and stuff. And of course, 2-3 weeks into it, my girls had lost interest. So, but I went online and just went searching, and wow, I had no idea there was such a large community, and mostly of adults, surprisingly enough. But I put the first ramp on there and just was smacked in the face with how many people are involved into this. And so by then, of course, my girls lost interest, and I loved it. So I kept going, and it just kept building more and more and more. And my brother helped me with it out a lot to begin with. And he doesn't have the interest exactly like I do. So, I learned a bit from him as far as carpentry. He's a master carpenter, and I'm an amateur at best. And I just kept going and was online, and the rest is history. And it kept going and kept going. And now it's gotten to the point where it's way bigger than I realized it would be, to be honest. It took me by surprise. That's for sure. How far it went in such a short time. So,
and then the brother we're talking about Michael, right?
Yes. My brother, Michael. I actually have 4 brothers. There's 5 of us, but, not all the same mama. That's a whole nother, nother story, but, Michael, he lives near me. All my other brothers don't live near me, but he was still interested in some. He goes to some of the large events and stuff with me here and there. And, other than that, he's not involved with the scene day in and day out like I am. So it's most, since the beginning, I guess. For the first couple months that he had helped, and of course he helped me build the original round of parks for you.
I remember that. I always thought that Michael was the helper, not like the expertise. And so that's like kind of interesting
No, no,
to
no.
find out now that you're theoretically the helper. He was the expertise at the beginning, so.
No, I'm a painter by trade. I paint houses professionally for a living, so I know coatings, and I'm real good with making what we build look nice. But as far as the carpentry, now I've learned a tremendous amount in the last 5 years or so. Even before fingerboarding, I was real interested in hobbyist carpentry and stuff like that. But it's came a long way. I've learned quite a bit. But yeah, my brother is a master carpenter. He knows a ton about that stuff, and I learned quite a bit from him and from the internet, and just keep learning. And I mean, I still consider myself an amateur carpenter, but I've kind of found a little niche, and I can make things, that I'm interested in making. So.
I feel kind of the same way. I feel like I'm still kind of an amateur at a lot of the things that I do, even though a lot of people, they view us, like both me and you, as like, top tier. And so maybe it's just because I haven't been doing it for very long, but it's like I feel like I'm an amateur. Even like this podcast, like I came 6 months ago, couldn't tell you the first thing about running a podcast. Now I'm just running weekly episodes like it's no big deal. And so like I look at things like that, and maybe it's just because I'm not like in, I haven't been doing it long enough to consider myself to be a professional, I guess. But it's definitely interesting how we all kind of like view ourselves as amateurs, even though like we're doing great things for sure.
I mean, yeah, let's be real about it. The only people doing it high and professional is Black River. I mean, Flat Face, they're definitely running their own business and living off of the business as Black River is. But very few of us out there are this is a career path. Of course I work 40 hours a week and still paint and stuff, and this is something that I do on the weekends, and I'm more and more, trying to do it and come back, bring warehouse ramps back. I know a lot of you, saw when when everything kind of went down the pipes in February, and but slowly I'm getting other facets of my life correct, so I can have more energy and time and focus on warehouse ramps, and hopefully bring everything back and do even more and bigger than before. So that's the idea, anyway.
Yeah, no, it's the same, I think, across the board for a lot of people. I feel like once people can kind of block out a certain amount of time a week to kind of dedicate towards their craft or their hobby, I feel like at that point, once it becomes consistent, people feel a lot more comfortable just diving head first into all these endeavors.
Yeah, it's a struggle, of course. Like I said, I'm married with kids, and I've got household bills and mortgage and things that fingerboarding simply doesn't pay for. So, I wish I could have a whole lot more time to do it, but it is what it is, and that's as far as I can tell, 98% really of these companies all out there, all of us got our day jobs, a lot of, and which is crazy. And people get upset with people about shipping and these different things. And you got to realize, like, people have the main stuff in their life going on. So it's, this is a hobby, straight up, until you're paying your mortgage and all your bills with it, it's a hobby. And that'd be nice to go further with it and do some big stuff. And I think that the industry, fingerboarding community and industry as a whole has a lot of growing to do, and a lot of, there's a lot of sky left to keep going up and up and up. So I think that with all these companies and everybody pitching in and doing their part, and I mean, it's already, it seems even bigger than it was when I first got back into fingerboarding 3 years ago. And really, I consider like really that the beginning of it. The stuff I did in the 90s was, not even on the same tier. You know, I was doing that stuff. This is before Tech Decks came out. Like where they weren't even a thing yet. I remember when Tech Decks came out, I was in middle school.
Yeah,
when I got that first one, I was like, good Lord, they're actually all parts. That is crazy.
And the wheels and moved. They moved
it was pretty wild. But you know, and I was interested in for a little tiny bit, but then of course, you know, I got a license, high school started, and you know, that stuff was out the door. So yeah, I really consider, I guess, me starting, you know, back into it is in, I don't know, probably November or so, maybe a little earlier that of 2020. So I would imagine the pandemic had a whole lot to do with that. So,
well, that's funny that you say that, because I got back in the pandemic as well, back in 2020. And that's when I was basically kind of doing my research, just kind of seeing what's going on with the industry, seeing what's what, because I came back probably literally from like 10 years of just not being in the scene or even really fingerboarding at all. So like COVID happened, lockdowns happened, stuff like that. I was like, all right, I'm gonna dust off all these old dusty plastic ramps and try to find a board. And my board I had was like an old Tech Deck, and the grip tape was smooth as a baby's bottom. And I was like, all right, I gotta go to Walmart, I guess, and go pick up another one. And so I was kind of just looking around and seeing what else was out there. And then like I knew that like I wanted newer things to skate on. So I had old like Tech Deck ramps, which are fine. But it's like when I'm getting on Instagram, I'm looking at all the other people's stuff. And then like people had like small parks and you got like Black River obstacles. And I was like, man, this stuff is cool. And I'm like, I don't know how I came across to you. I don't know if it was in the Fingerboarding Unlimited group or like how that happened originally, but
trying to remember. I want to say it was in the Unlimited group. Because I was for a good while at first when I got back into it, it was only Facebook and the groups on Facebook. I didn't get onto Instagram till a little bit later. I think it was on in the Unlimited group. Shout out Cody.
Yeah, shout out Cody Mexico. I was I started a bunch of fingerboarding groups right when Cody, I think, either did it pretty close to when or maybe a couple months after. Mm-hmm. But like real fingerboarding groups on Facebook when I was looking, and I was just like, that's kind of weird. Like they were, but they weren't. And then like,
well, yeah, I mean, you had like the Flip District, but that was mostly, you know, European, it was Philippines
overseas,
over there. And we really didn't have nothing here. And except for the Tech Deck page, but that's all a bunch of mostly kids and collectors and things like that. But I remember getting into Unlimited. It was less than 200 people in there.
Yeah, and I was there at the beginning too. And I started a few because I was just like, there's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm proud of where it's grown. Cody's done a good job with choosing his moderators and doing what he needs to do to grow it. And I mean, I think it's over 7,000 now. So it's up there. You know, and most of the people in it are like,
they're participants.
They're participants, or they're fingerboard connoisseurs. They're all about the craft and the high end side of fingerboarding, not necessarily just collecting toy Tech Decks. I thought that's real cool. There's a lot of content and a lot of stuff going on, and of course that helped us connect and a lot of people connect. So I've met a lot of people just through that group. So
yeah, I met so many new people, some OGs, just a whole variety of people in that group for sure. And then for me, even though I've got other groups, I think that the Unlimited group probably has like the strongest core of people in it by far. Like I've got groups that have like crazy numbers, like, you know, 15,000-20,000 people, but I think like maybe 3,000 or 4,000 of those people are like actually like really involved in that group. Yeah, they're like active members. And so like when you look at the fingerboarding unlimited group, it has like maybe 7,000-8,000 people in it. Like, I feel like 5,000 or 6,000 of those people are like literally like active and participating and commenting and posting. And like, it's a very active group for sure.
For sure. Yeah. It's got a lot of, there's some strife, but it's got a lot of heart, you know. Definitely. a lot of the other groups are just shells essentially.
How did we first meet? Was it literally through the Facebook group? Like, I remember reaching out to you, but I don't remember the actual conversation.
I don't exactly either. I think I started to post the first batch of the first large batch of ramps that I made were all the tech deck like box and different things. I essentially made a replica OG whatever tech deck, the original tech deck fly box that came out. And when I had posted that, I think that is when I started to get a lot more responses, a lot more people interested in what we were doing. And I think right about that time I had gotten a message from you. You, of course, looking for, you know, lots of parks and stuff for the upcoming first tour. Then it just took off from there. I mean, you ordered four or five parks, and good Lord, and once I made those and posted about those, then it was
game over for sure.
It's game over for sure. So anyway.
So but the first batch of parks that I got from you, were those the first parks that you made?
Yes. All the ones that you have are the OG parks for sure. The very first one I made was the Hazard Park. Of course, my brother Michael helped me make all five of the original ones.
I think I only have four.
Four? Let's see. You have the Hazard Park. We have four
for season one. So we had Hazard, Reapers, Run, Double Barrel, and the Street Style Park.
Ah, okay. So it was four originally. That's right. Yeah. Okay. And then for the second year, I made three of the S1 Plazas, which I guess you sold one to Fatty's. They have one, that one still.
And then the season one went to Cube, Mike Sherrill of this.
That's right.
One league champion. And so season one, we gave away a warehouse ramp park to Mike Sherrill. Right, so that's pretty cool. Which you can actually skate that in Denver.
I'm glad that they have, you know, a piece of what I do out in Colorado. You know, they got a super exciting and awesome scene out there. So I'm glad to be a part of it. And then I kept the third one, and you know what happened there. Mr. Alex Nugent bought it from me, and he practically had to pry it out of his hands.
I did. I ended up picking it back up.
He was not trying to get rid of it, but I convinced him that, look, I'm here, like, in the same town as you. We're gonna build more stuff. So
I appreciate that.
You know, but it's good. It's good that he did. I'm glad that you have that plaza on the tour again, and keep it this time.
I'm definitely keeping it. I was going through a weird transition with the store, and we lost our butt last year on the tour, and literally totally sunk the store that. And I was just like, man, I got to get rid of like all of this stuff. I got to make money back. I've got to keep moving forward, stuff like that. And so I didn't want to, but you know, Fatty's came down. They're like, we got cash. I'm like, I don't know. I love that thing.
You know how it is. Money talks.
It does. But I always knew you had a third one. So I'm like, if all else fails, I can just be like, hey, Dave, like, what's going on with that third S1 Plaza?
That was definitely... that was definitely an adventure building three of the same all at the same time. But, you know, I got to do that more. So everything I buy is not exactly just one of one, and that's only going to get more people involved in what I do. So.
No, definitely. I mean, for people that don't even realize, like, we took all your parks on tour. And those were the first set of parks that you made. And people were utterly amazed at the quality of your parks. And so for me, as like a person that literally hauls all this stuff around the country and like, you know, in Canada as well, like just all over the place, like we're talking about parks that have like literally stood the test of time. Like if you're looking at like your parks, if you look at them like on top, everything, like they look practically brand new. And these things have seen like 50,000 road miles. They've been in and out of that trailer. They've been dinged up and like they still look really good condition.
I probably build them way heavier duty than they actually need to be. So
for me, that's a good thing. Like that's true. And they got handles. They're easy to move. Like they're built right. Like they are, and they got lips on like every one of those parks has a lip along the outer edges so that if you lose your board, it doesn't fly off the table. The lip catches it. Like that, absolutely that, ingenious.
That is a funny story. I did and did not come up with that. So what happened was when in my initial research, as I'm like designing and building parks initially, you know, of course I'm looking at what Black River does. They're the top in the world. So, you know, when I first had looked at all their parks, I thought that there was an edge on all of their parks around because they've got like the strip of black on the top that wraps around to the side. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't see that in the picture necessarily, that there wasn't a lip. And so I was like, oh, that's a great idea. So I put a lip on mine and theirs didn't have it. And all of a sudden I'm like the only one doing it. And it was complete mistake, an accident, but I'm, you know, it turned out for the best, I guess.
Oh, definitely. Now if anybody else decides that they're going to do that, I'm like, that's a Dave Ware feature right there.
Yeah. It was not like, I don't know. It was original, but not original at the same time. So, you know, but now it's standard. Now I won't build a park without the lip around. You know, you got to have a little quarter inch lip to just catch the wheels, but it's not high enough that it's messing with you, with your wrist and your, you know, fingerboard around the edges and stuff like that. So by the way, I apologize if I curse. I'm trying my best not to.
It's okay.
I'm way too much sailor over here.
It's all good. It's I absolutely love all your stuff. I love the Reaper's Run is probably that's like the fan favorite. It's like when people come on tour, obviously, you know, people love the Black River parks, but it's like out of all of the parks that we have that are made by you, like the Reaper's Run is definitely like the go-to for everybody.
It's definitely one of, if not my favorite of the original batch of four, for sure. I think it was, let's see. No, Hazard was symmetrical, Reaper's Run, Double Barrel was, but Reaper's Run was actually the last of those four built.
You got like the marble cut and everything. It's all themed. It's got like the bloody gore vampire kind of feel to it with the coffin at the end. Like, kind of tell people like what kind of inspired that.
That was just me. Well, we were thinking, you know, the two rails that come to the end and then the, you know, the casket shape granite top piece. We weren't going to do that at first. We were just going to do like a triangle or something so you could kind of come off the rails and hit that easily enough, but it was going to be in the way for like just landing normal. Anyway, somehow in me and my brother talking and building it, we decided to do the coffin shape thing on there. And that piece led to the theme of the entire rest of the park. That was just I don't know, we'd done an industrial one that was nice clear lacquer and beautiful wood, and then you know, one the Double Barrel just had a ton of, you know, huge metal half pipes and stuff. So
we thought we'd switch it up. So talk about the Double Barrel, like that one. They're all themed. They're all unique. And that's what I kind of like about your stuff, is like you can go from Hazard, which I feel like is more Tony Hawk inspired. And then you got Reaper's Run. But like each one of these parks are like completely different from the last. Even the new stuff, they're all different in some shape or form.
It seems to be that way. I seem to try to, I don't know, maybe I get bored with certain designs, and I'm always looking for new designs and new ways. I pore over the internet. I'm very involved with Instagram and Facebook still, and I talk to people all the time, and try to not just be one of those companies that is on there and you never see them like your post, or you never see them comment, or none of that kind of mess. I'll like and follow somebody that has 100 followers, that a kid just trying. It's all about support for everybody, because the community is small enough, so we all have support everybody.
No, definitely. I feel that 100% for sure. The street style park, which is the season one competition park for all the OG USAFBLers out there. You made a competition street park for us, and this thing goes hard. Has like the rainbow rail in the middle. Like, kind of explain a little about like the thought process behind this.
I guess all of three of the other ones were all symmetrical. So this one, we were trying to, the whole idea was to make it as straight as we could, but related to fingerboarding, of course. And I think I designed, I probably designed a little over half of the obstacles that are on that park, and my brother helped me design some of the other ones. I mean, he helped in the designing of all four of the first parks. It was just something different. I probably, if I were to do it again, I would change it up, of course, and that's just my attention span probably trying to get bigger and better things. So I've got one down the pipe that's coming. My new street park, and it's gonna be something, that's for sure. It is a monster.
I saw the pictures and stuff of it. I guess kind of tell people like the big changes between the generation parks, which are like generation one parks, which are the ones I've got, comparison to the newer stuff that you got going on now.
A lot of it is scale. So a lot, like, say for instance, the double barrel park, like the steps coming down it, I wouldn't do it the same now as I did then because the scale was off. Of course, we're in like 1/12 scale, and so every inch equals 1 foot. And so a standard step, and if you know anything about construction, coding and stuff, but a standard step is generally about 6 inches. I think it can go from 5 to 7 or 8 inches. I'm not sure what the code is, like probably per state. The point is, if a step is generally, six inches, then that relates to a half inch step. And so I think on some of the other parks, with like I was getting talking about with scaling, they're too tall. Like you would have a foot step or something in real life in
Oh,
scale.
gotcha.
So some of that is a little off. I have a lot more standardized scaling methods of how I do say a stair set or whatever the case may be. I try to be a lot more on point with the scale of the parks and thinking of, for example, like a pole jam, an actual pole at a business or something is roughly, I don't know, 3 feet or so. You'd want to make a pole jam roughly 3 inches, so it's the right scale to look proper around everything else. Of course, the whole point is to take a picture of it and you not be able to tell that it's small in the picture. So
That is true. I like that. There's a couple
yeah.
parks I've seen where like they're, I wouldn't say like parks, they're like just DIY spots.
Yeah.
And it just looks like if you didn't like zoom out, like you would have just
Right.
assumed that like you were literally looking at like a gutter alley with a sewer like spill
Yeah.
going on over there or something like that. And so
Yeah,
like, no, I agree.
I agree. Some of these guys online that I see on Instagram and on the Unlimited group, they are some talented diorama people. They really go the extra step for all of the all of the look, you know, all of the patinas and different things to make it look as accurate as the real thing as possible. I've gotten into some of that. I try to do like little plants and little things here and there, but I would say more so my main focus is making everything functional, the flow of the park. Can you go from one obstacle to the next, have enough time to reset up? You know, all those different things like that. Obviously a skate park, you can't just replicate a skate park and expect it to work for fingerboarding. There are certain design elements that you have to change because you've got an arm attached to your hand fingerboarding. So you hit things with your wrist as you go and by. And so that definitely, you know, I would say that design of fingerboard parks is slightly different than skateboarding, but you know, obviously you got to pay homage to that still. And I think that these diorama people that really get into the graffiti and just really have the look of the park, I have nothing but respect for those people. I definitely am trying to do it more and more. And man, there's a good group of people on Instagram and especially that are just amazing at that stuff. So I encourage everybody to follow them, whether they do fingerboarding obstacles or not, because it's, you know, it relates to miniature stuff and we all are kind of into miniature stuff. So
no, I feel that 100%. There's a lot of people out there. I would consider myself to be a park collector. I think at one point I was sitting on 36, 37 parks in my storefront, which was absolutely insane. Like, actually looking back, like there was still like six or seven parks I had on shelves that I didn't even have enough floor space for, which was absolutely crazy. And so when I look at, like, you know, just really good park makers, you know, like your name is definitely in that category for sure. There's some other people like Tiny Ramp Co. I could definitely want to give a shout out to.
Nothing but respect for them. They make, I guess it's not Nate as much. It's his partner that builds a lot of it, but Nate helps maybe. I'm not sure
exactly. I think Nate is actually the guy that does the majority of it. I met him out in Phoenix then I had the opportunity to skate the SLS park at G8.
There's two of them though, correct? He has
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100%. Nate's the only one that I've met. Yeah. And then
because they sponsored our event coming up, and it threw me off at first because I'm talking to Nate, but then he's talking about it, the other guy that's going to send the pack. And yeah, I think there's two of them. Obviously you see Nate doing the fingerboarding mostly. And then I don't know exactly the ratio of who builds what, but regardless, everything they do is mad inspirational. They're pretty,
they're
pretty amazing in what they do. Of course their whole line of SLS parks that they, the replicas and stuff they do is, you know,
it's pretty cool stuff.
I mean, if you're involved in fingerboarding in any kind of large way, you've seen these parks. So
even Mike Snyder, I believe, has a park sitting somewhere in his house that Nate built him. So
yeah.
Big shout out Tiny Rico, the S-Rail and all that.
Yeah, he's they've got like wear and tear on the concrete, that park is pretty cool for sure.
Actually, that's not true. I got to skate that one at our collaboration event this summer. I think he brought it down. Yeah. So actually, I did get a chance to skate that one along with the SLS one.
Yeah, I really wanted to go to that event. That was about the time that I had to stop building and put warehouse ramps aside for a time. But if y'all do that again, all at the compound in Flatface, then I'll definitely be there.
So. Yeah, definitely. He's got a Rendezvous just launched today. I don't know if you saw that on Instagram.
I haven't.
He launched it literally this morning. I want to say it's November 10th. Okay. I mean, I just briefly glanced at it. So if it is not the right date, please don't, you know, kill the messenger. Okay. But yeah, he launched Rendezvous date this morning. So
nothing but mad respect to Mike and Ellen and Flatface. They are just awesome. Yeah, They've been nothing but kind to me. I know Mike is pretty busy. I actually talked to Ellen a whole lot more than I've talked to Mike, but nothing but respect for them. And the rendezvous event, it's a industry staple straight up. So they're, I don't really know of too many events except for one that might be coming up, that as big as what they do. So, nothing but respect.
Yeah, no, definitely. Also, I want to just give a huge shout out to Dark Matter as well. I feel that his custom that parks are absolutely top tier.
Yeah, he's on a whole nother level, straight up. Yeah, that guy is pretty damn amazing at what he does. I mean, even the stuff that I've seen in person that you had on tour the first year, and he stepped up his skills from then. I definitely follow him and all these guys. So they're mad inspirational for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Hollywood High is still a staple. I'm actually very, very sad that I had to let that one go.
Yeah, but nobody will ever build a Hollywood High that's as cool.
Not like that. That thing was 12 feet long. That thing was a monster, and it was scaled, and it is just as difficult to fingerboard as it is to skate in real life. And so, kudos for sure.
Without a doubt.
And of course, you can't leave out the goats, the Black River parks. Those are,
they hands down are the best in the game. You can't say nothing about that. They, numbers talk. I mean, they've sold more parks, way more parks than everybody like combined. So, nothing but respect for Black River. And, if we didn't have Black River, the whole scene wouldn't be nearly as big. They paved the way for me to be able to sell parks to you, for you to be able to do a tour, like for Flatface to start and go. I mean, it's like they're the original OGs. Nothing but respect for what they do.
They are definitely the glue that kind of holds the community together, and they're consistent day in, day out, year in, year out for over 20 years now, which is crazy.
Well, like I said, you got, all these other companies, it's just one, maybe two guys. They're in their garage. They got a day job. They're not paying their bills with fingerboarding. But, Black River is just one of those companies. I think they have 40 plus employees. They have huge warehouses. They mass produce stuff. It's only inspiring. I wish I could do something like that to pay my bills. So
I actually didn't even know. I knew they had an operation. I just don't know like what's actually going on behind the scenes like that. It'd be kind of crazy to kind of go overseas and just see how they even structure like something like that. Cause like we only see what they want us to see. Like they don't see what's going on behind the doors, behind, what's like actually going on. It's kind of the same thing with us. Like you kind of only see like the tour and the glam and all that stuff, but no one sees like, 9 months of pre-planning to make a tour happen kind of stuff. And so it'd be interesting kind of see what's going on like behind the scenes and stuff for them for sure.
Without a doubt. I mean, I know that the information and the pictures that I've seen and gathered, I mean, hell, I've seen pictures where there's gotta be 1,000 obstacles in one room on shelves. They do their thing. Without a doubt. And if it wasn't for them, none of us would be as successful as we are. So
this is facts.
Yeah.
So our biggest, we did so much stuff right, like between like 2020 and 2021 before the tour. Like you hosted a sesh meetup event back in like 21 with the tour parks, and then we did that out in the park and all that. I don't know if you remember that. Remember that?
Yeah, long ago. We did that at one of our local skate parks. We're very blessed to have 4, 5, 6 skate parks in my area, so it's pretty awesome. We did that at one of the outdoor concrete parks, which is really just like a stroke of luck and just a brainstorm idea to have it there. Cause we probably got I don't know, 40 people actually organically that meant to come and all that. But we did it on a Saturday. It was beautiful outside. Yeah. There were lots and lots of people at the skate park, which were doing it right outside the fences. And so we had, I don't know, we probably had 300 people or so just walk over and, mm-hmm. and just, what is this? And so it was a hugely successful, that first one. But yeah, that was when that was the day I met you in person.
In real life, yeah. Came down and picked up all the parks.
Yeah. Definitely was proud of that one. But we aimed to do it bigger and better. I had the second year I tried to do that, we had a bit of rain, and it wasn't nearly as successful. There was nobody at the park that day. So anybody mm-hmm. who came was organic. It was kind of, we even ended early because people weren't coming. So that one wasn't so great, but last December we had one at my old shop, which unfortunately I don't have anymore, but we had one at the old shop, and that was one of the funnest times I've ever had fingerboarding. It was, you know, a private event, so you know, we did our thing and our adult activities kind of thing, and fingerboarded, and it was just fully private, and it was from like 6 till whenever, you know, we wanted to stop or whatever in the morning. And man, what a blast. I probably had a capacity of maybe 40 people in that warehouse, it wasn't that big of a little warehouse, but little deal. And I know we had 30 at least show up, and it was just so much fun, without a doubt.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to see the store before it, I wouldn't say store, but you know, the shop, I guess you would call it.
It's like it's a flex space. Some people call it. You have about, I don't know, 1500 square feet in the back, and then some offices in the front.
Yeah. I had the opportunity to come down and pick up Mike Sherrill's S1 Plaza, and then our S1 Plaza for the tour for 2022.
Yeah,
so I had a chance to see that. Yeah. So it was pretty cool. Got to skate all the parks that you had back then, which was pretty impressive.
I've built a lot of crap since February, and I stopped, you know, doing custom orders and building for the general public. Of course, I didn't ever stop fingerboarding. I still hang out every Thursday with our local crew, which I'm very proud to say that, man, we've gained a lot. When I first started, you know, fingerboarding and doing stuff here in Wilmington, I had just one friend of mine, John, and it was, you know, for, I don't know, weeks or months, it was just me and him. We'd get together once a week and hang out and fingerboard and stuff. John Ward. So I had actually known John Ward for many years through the music scene here locally. I do a lot of music and a lot of band stuff, and he's an amazing drummer. And so I knew him previously from that. We just happened to realize that we were both into fingerboarding. And so we hung out a little bit and for weeks and months. And then all of a sudden we started to find some more people locally. And now, you know, 3 years later, our local crew is like 25 strong. It's pretty, pretty impressive. I'm pretty amazed that we've been able to find so many people in town that are interested. So all adults too, you know, so it's pretty, pretty awesome.
No, that's, I really want to try to get to a point where I'm highlighting community leaders. And so like, if you go to an area, you know, if it's Denver, Colorado, you know, it's Mike Sherrill and this, and like, if it's, you know, Wilmington, North Carolina, it's going to be, you know, Dave Ware, Warehouse Ramps. If it's, you know, Orlando, it's going to be Yuck Skateboard Shop. If it's, mm-hmm. you know, Michigan, it could be, you know, Grind Fingerboards or Fatty's Pre-Roll, or back a year ago, you know, if you said Indianapolis, you know, it would have been, you know, Levine and USFPL, stuff like that. So like, I kind of want to put together like a map where like people can kind of get in touch with those community leaders and stuff like that, for sure. Cause I feel like people travel and they're always like, huh, I wonder what's going on in this city. And they kind of don't think that there is, even though there may be.
I mean, it's, from what I can tell, there are fingerboarders everywhere.
There are, for sure.
I think a lot of fingerboarders that have never done it around other people. I'd never actually fingerboarded with somebody else that is as interested in it as they are. A lot of those people, I think, are not closeted about it, but they're not like forthcoming, like, and talking to people outside of their personal, you know, space about it necessarily, because a lot of people view it as you're an adult playing with a toy and you get embarrassed about it. Hell, I can admit I was, you know, somewhat like that in the beginning. And I can't remember what the point was, but at one point I was like, that's just dumb. I love this and I'm proud of it, and I'm want to share it with everybody I'm around. So, you know, I think that, I think it's a hard thing for a lot of people. A lot of people I talk to on Unlimited and stuff, you know, there's nobody around them. Mm-hmm. And, but I think if they actually make more effort and more trying to find people around them talking and are less, not wanting to reveal that part of, about them to people that's immediately around them, if they can drop those feelings about it and be proud of what they do, they will find that there's probably other people just like them in their town, in their city. And, you know, my case, for a good example, you know, for a long while, it was just two guys and now it's over 20. Mm-hmm. So, you know, every week we get together every Thursday, and we have at least 8 to 10 to 12 there every Thursday.
Yeah.
I can't imagine we get everybody to come on a day. We're not going to have enough parks and stuff for everybody, but,
so but the fact that you guys have that hangout though, that's so cool to have, like, just we are that crew.
Well, yes, I was glad to be able to provide that for a good while up until, of course, last February, and the poop hit the fan, so to say, and I had to change gears and focus on some other more important stuff in my life. But we're real fortunate that not too long before that, I don't know, it was probably not 2 months before that, maybe. No, it was before. I met him before our last December event, that private event. So it must have been the latter part of last year that I met Alex Nugent.
Okay.
And he kind of came out of nowhere, pretty shy guy. And I imagine he didn't fingerboard with a whole lot of people beforehand. And then, you know, he found us and came to my shop for the first time. And we were just blown away. This dude is good.
Holy he's mackerel. Really good.
He's super good. But anyway, I think that being around more people helped him come out of his shell more, and he's certainly more outgoing than when I first met him, which may have just been because he didn't know us, you know, of course. But we're very, very fortunate to have met Alex, you know, because when that all happened in February, you know, I didn't know what I was going to do with all the parks. I had probably 10, 12 parks at that point, and I really didn't have nowhere to take them. I didn't want to just throw them away. And so I was going to try to sell them, but obviously the clientele that will come to Wilmington and physically pick it up, because there is no shipping those heavy duty things, was slim to none. Yeah. So, you know, I had, but Alex, I was real fortunate that he wanted to buy a bunch. I had a few other buddies buy some of the other parks, but everybody brought their parks all to Alex's, where his family owns a warehouse that they've had for, I don't know, 30 plus years, just outside of Wilmington. And they use it. His dad uses it for their business. But, you know, he has full reign to access to use it. There's a lot of open space in there. And we're just very, very fortunate to have met Alex, and for all of this to be to the point now to where we can even still get together on Thursdays. Because back in February, I was real scared. All that we had built for 2 or 3 years was about to just fall apart, because we didn't have a central location for everybody to come to. So, you know, shout out to Alex. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Keeping fingerboarding alive out there. Yeah.
We all appreciate him. And since that's happened, we've met, 10 or 15 more people. Like it's crazy. We got people mm-hmm. coming from Fayetteville, every other week and it's grown bigger and bigger and bigger to the point now we're doing this crazy event. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I really wanted that here in Indy. Like when we had to, you know, close our shop down, we had the same thing as well. Like, you know, we tried to sell a bunch of the parks and
yeah.
I mean, I probably gave away 4 or 5 parks just because I don't even have the space. I couldn't afford to store them all because I have to keep yeah. all the tour parks as well. And then when you have 36, 37 parks, I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot of space.
Yeah, it's a lot of space. And people don't even understand. Like, that's absolutely crazy. And so, like, yeah, there was a few parks. I'm just like, if you can come and get it and figure out a way to haul it out of here, like, you can have it kind of a thing. And so I'm lucky yeah. that there's still probably 8 or 9 parks that are probably within like a 45-minute drive of here where I'm at here in Indy. But my big thing was, you know, I don't have a place now that draws people in that we can have regular weekly sessions. I'm sitting on an entire tour full of parks and like I can't do really too much with them, which is absolutely breaks my heart. Like it's crazy.
Yeah, I definitely think that and back to, you know, solo fingerboarders out and wherever they are, you know, it's a lot of us are very fortunate to have either built or found a community that's around us, and a lot of us aren't. And you know, that's all I can do is be thankful, you know, that we're Definitely. That I even have anybody around. You know, if a year had went by when I first built that first obstacle, there's my boss man. I'll have to call him back. You know, we're just very fortunate, you know, that to have what we have. And, you know, I didn't think that I didn't think it would get to this point, you know, where it is now. If I hadn't found community local to me within a year or two, I probably still wouldn't have the same interest, to be honest. You know, there's a vast and amazing community online, but, you know, person to person interaction in, well, fingerboarding and really any activity really hones it in for you, really mm-hmm. brings it more into your heart more. You get down, you enjoy it more. You can get excited more because, you know, you have somebody to conversate that can relate to you and things like that. So we're extremely thankful that we even have a community because so many people don't. So yeah, or local community. So But, you know, everybody's got to start somewhere. I started with just myself and found John, my friend John, and then now it's bloomed out. And, you know, you can do it too in your own area. You just got to reach out and you got to come out of your shell with it. And you got to be proud of what you do. And you got to, you know, show people, look, this ain't no toy tech deck. This ain't a $3 piece of plastic from Walmart. This is, you know, hell, I've got a slew of fingerboards. All of them are over $100 setups. You know, this is the real thing. And people, you know, they don't realize, you know, that all the mechanics, mm-hmm. all the physics of it is exactly the same. All of that. But anyway, back to what I was saying before, you know, people just, they have to reach out. They have to try to find people around them, because if you don't, you're definitely not.
No, I agree. Anybody who's listening or watching, I mean, like if there is a community or a storefront or just anything that's relatively close to you, participate, support it, figure out a way to be part of it, figure out a way to help, you know, sustain it. Because these things are extremely niche and these markets are extremely fragile. Like, people don't realize like the difference between literally keeping something open or keeping things moving forward could be the difference between like literally 5 or 10 people. Like our markets, our industry is so fragile that like, you know, literally every person matters, every person counts. And so you might think that, oh, I might miss this event. It'd be fine. It might be a next one. Like they may not be a next one. That's not guaranteed. And so it's one of those, like you have to support it.
Yeah, that's for certain. I thought it was all over in February. I'm Yeah, I thought I was done for sure. But like I said, I was able to bring things, other parts of my life into focus, and my family and stuff. And I'm in a lot better place now. And yeah, it's a fragile thing, you know, even one person's involvement with it personally, all the way to, you know, a company. It's all about community and support. And if there is no community and support, if there's no support, you know, there's no community, not really. It's not going to survive and last and get to where it gets. But I mean, just for example, like all the different groups that are on online or whatever, woodworking mm-hmm. groups, or you know, whatever doll groups or whatever the niche may be, you know, or even just skateboarding groups, you know, there's a lot of non-compliance, non-support in some of these groups, and a lot of people, like, you know, talking crap to each other and all this stuff. And I'm proud to say that in most of these fingerboard, you know, of course people in every group get into it with one thing or another and all that, but on the large majority part, it is super supportive. You know, just posting, you know, like you'll have a guy who just started making some obstacles or something, and he makes this little not very nice obstacle, you know, whatever, but everybody's like, man, that's awesome, you know, and they give him lots of support and encouragement. And you know, and then 3 years later, he's making magnificent parks or something. You just don't know.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely community support driven. And we all need to fully embrace that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We need, you know, fully embrace helping each other out. Cause like you said, this is a niche, small, you know, community, as far as based on, you know, in relation to other types of communities. So, you know, definitely got to support.
Even if it's a lot of people think that support is a physical thing or even like a financial thing. It's doesn't Simple have words. To be that way.
Simple words.
Yeah. That's a lot of people don't realize that, like, support can literally just be knowledge. And so, like, I get people all the time are like, hey, I want to do a meetup. I don't even know where to start. And I'm just like, okay, no problems, man. Like, let me tell you, like, what you need, the steps you need to do to basically be able to, you know, host a successful meetup. And then you can work up to an actual full blown event. And then, like, you know, there's people that are like, I'm a deck maker. I just started making decks. And then, like, maybe their holes are blown out. And you're like, hey, like, I would probably do it this way so you don't have blown out holes. And they're like, oh, snaps. Thank you. Like, people don't even realize, like, support can literally, it may be criticism, and it could be, depending on, you know, who it is, they may be like, well, you know, I go into defensive mode. But for the most part, like, you know, support can also just be knowledge. And so, like, we know a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of people that have been dabbing around with a lot of things. And so just giving people simple tips, support, stuff like that. I mean, whether they take it or not, that's a whole nother story. But, you know, knowledge could just, you know, that's another form of support that isn't necessarily like a physical or a financial thing.
For sure. You know, I think that there are, you know, and with making obstacles or boards, or not so much trucks, because that's way
it's a whole nother,
that's a whole nother thing. But boards and wheels, you know, a lot of these, I do see some, you know, from time to time, a lot of people ask questions, and the, you know, the builder or maker doesn't want to come off that information. So I can see both sides of it, to be quite honest. I can see, you know, one side, they have put in all this time and effort and research and going through the trial and error and all this stuff to come to the product that they've made. And so they want to safeguard, they are inclined to safeguard that information, the supposed gatekeepers. You know, I can understand that.
And I can understand
that why they're defensive about that. But at the same time, it goes back to what we were talking about before about support. And, you know, I've never had an issue with that. Anytime somebody asks me how I built something, or what I use, what technique, blah, 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 what tool, I have zero problem giving that information. I think it's a little bit different for sure with obstacle and park makers versus deck and wheel makers, because there's so much what is constituted as a proper or nice obstacle or park. The range is so much wider and bigger mm-hmm. than what is considered a quality deck or quality wheels. You know, mm-hmm. there is a lot narrower range of what people would consider quality in those respects versus say building a park. There's that's why I was always attracted to that end of it versus trying to make decks or wheels or anything else. Because I got way more freedom and creativity to design and do how I like, a lot of it for me really is designing the parks. I love doing that stuff. I'm all into CAD and online and making them virtually before I build them. But with wheels and decks, it's a lot harder, I think, to make a quality deck and wheel than a lot of people realize. You know, they just get some molds and they do their deal and yeah, I got great deck, but they don't realize all the other little things like mm-hmm. the proper dying of it and a proper press and gauge, so you're pressing it so it's crisp and it has mm-hmm. lots of pop or wheels that I've since or probably within the last year or more have switched to plastic. I like urethane and was all about urethane from when I started all the way to a point. And then I realized, you can do a whole lot more tricks with plastic wheels than you can urethane because they are grippy. They're too grippy. You can do once better. You're sweeping your tray flips much easier, little things like that. Of course, it's all a preference thing. Plenty of people like the grippy wheels and stuff like that. But those little gatekeeper techniques and how they do making the boards and the wheels and stuff. I think general knowledge is okay to share. I mean, we're all trying to, it's not like there's 10,000 deckmate and you got all this competition, out there. People, what as they say, real recognizes real, whatever,
you get a deck game.
If you get a deck in your hand, you can tell if it's quality or not. Once you set it up, you can tell if it's quality or not by the feel, the pop, all that stuff. So that's one of those things. I'm not sitting here trying to tell all the gatekeepers give their secrets, but at the same time, a little support of the people that love and use your products is a good thing.
I feel that. I'm probably going to get some hate over this next comment, but I'm going to throw it out there on the record. Unless you are doing this full time and making a living off of what you do, I feel that like the gatekeeping in the community is way too strong for people to just be doing drops here and there. I feel that not enough people producing products. Everybody's literally waiting on drops. There's very few companies that like you can go on their site and like everything is available. Yeah. And so I feel like with the gatekeeping out there, like there is a lack of new people entering our space, but our scene is growing year after year after year. And I'm experiencing that firsthand, but there's crazy. Not enough product. Yeah. There's just not enough product out there. And I don't think people like as a whole are kind of looking at it like that. Like the scene is growing, but the amount of suppliers are the same. And so there's a shortage. And so like, if you're looking for a specific brand or a specific company or a specific obstacle, like 90% of the time, you can't find that. You can't get it. And that's why the secondhand market is so crazy, because we're.
Yeah, that's a whole other episode.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Jeez, but I got certainly reservations and issues about that, but yeah, definitely it's some of the gatekeeping could be loosened for sure.
Just I'm not saying like every single thing needs to be out there to the public, but I do feel like you know, if someone who legitimately has already taken the steps to start their own thing, they've obviously, they're pretty serious about it. They've already started buying this or doing that, or they've already spent 2 months doing this. So like, they're pretty far into their journey already. I feel like those standards should be kind of lifted a little bit, you know? I mean, if you're right out of the gate, like, hey, I'm thinking about doing it, then maybe not. But it's one of those, like, I don't know, maybe that's just me just ranting on, but that's where I kind of feel.
Yeah, I mean, as we said before, I can understand both sides for sure. I understand how people want to be guarded, so they're not mimicked in a way that depreciates the value of their product. You know, but at the same time, like, this community is not that big. It's really not. It's a very niche community. You don't know, you know, you can name almost any other activity and find 100 people in your town that would have done it before or have been interested at some point. Fingerboarding just ain't one of them. You know, it's like finding friends to go yo-yo with. Like, you're not going to find that many. So it's, again, we all just have to support each other, period.
Yeah, no, you know, definitely.
In the end, that's how we grow this. That's how we get fingerboarding on TV. That's how we have world championships, not just US and European championships. That's how we have, you know, so we have a lot more. You know,
you're preaching the dream, brother. You're preaching
big
the dream.
Prime time, you know, sponsorship, like something that has companies that have nothing to do with fingerboarding, you know, or stuff like that. It's
I'm trying to get Toyota to be
like whatever, anything.
I want Toyota to be like, Toyota, if you're listening, like, I need someone to like be giving away a car for like, you know, all these events type stuff. Like,
yeah,
I'm watching PGA golf. You hit a hole in one, they're giving away a car. Like, I feel like if you can do like the impossible trick, like to ever do in real life, like they're just giving away a car. Like, we need Toyota or somebody like just sponsoring crazy stuff like that.
For sure. Yeah. It's a struggle, I think, with a lot of people and identity and stuff like that in the community that, you know, we all want fingerboarding to get bigger. We all want fingerboarding to get as big as skateboarding. That'll probably never happen, but you know, we can all hope. But at the same time, we have to, you know, skateboarding has, as in general, like, there's a great community skateboarding, but there's also a lot of bad elements to that community, you know, people that are not in it for the right reasons and all this other stuff. And you know, and the big sponsorship stuff and that, like, you know, making a otherwise, you know, awesome competition or something too commercialized, not personable, not intimate relationship with the activity that you're doing, and you know, not original.
Yeah,
you know?
No, I feel
not original. It's too commercialized, and I see there, you know, a lot of people have that that mindset where they wouldn't want it to get to that point. You know, they wouldn't want it because it takes away some of the personal things about it. But those who get big with it and those who try to push the envelope and get more, you know, just have to realize that, you know, you can't do it without the community. You can't do it without the people. You have to be a part of the community. You have to be within it. You have to be doing stuff with people, going to events, doing, you know, being a part of the community and not just an online face. You know, so it has to be a balance, but ultimately, if we all want what we love to get bigger and crazier and more people around the world involved, then it's, you know, in the end, it will take large sponsorship. It will take that corporate engine to really take it to the next level. We just all have to be careful as a community to not let it get to that level in a fake or an unhonest way, you know.
No, I agree 100%. That's probably one of the biggest fears right now that the community has supporting me, is that this has the possibility of becoming so large that it basically, like, it no longer becomes authentic. And so like for right. me,
lost its value.
Yes. And so like for me, like I have to basically make sure and ensure that like we only take it to so far to where we can keep the authenticity. And so like I can use example like the Barracks, for instance, like Battle of the Barracks.
Yeah,
they went too big. I don't know the whole story behind that, but I mean, Barra and all that, I mean, they are basically fighting to get that back so they can take full control of it, so they can run it the way they want it to be ran. And so
yeah, for me, like online.
Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff behind. I just haven't dug too deep into it. I really should, just to kind of, it's to me, it's just kind of dramaful, but yeah. It's like, it's definitely probably something I definitely need to at least know so that I know like what actually happened to, so that they got to that point. But
yeah, you know, a smart man always learns from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I definitely need to do some digging and stuff like that as well. But like for me, I feel like I definitely have a responsibility to the community to make sure that we continue to stay authentic. We continue to grow the community and we continue to support and enable other people to do the same.
Right. Exactly. And I think there are people out there that may have they think about you wrong with that. Mm-hmm. You know, they think you're trying to be this corporate entity to come in and just like take fingerboarding away from the originators and away from the OGs or whatever. And that's not it. I mean, I'll tell everybody out there. I know Levon. I've met him numerous times now. We've hung out. We've, you know, all that. And this man loves fingerboarding, loves it like the rest of us do. You know, he is a fingerboarder before he's a businessman in this thing. The business end of it is just a way to make the fingerboarding way more in his life and all of our lives. So, nothing but mad love and respect. And I think that you have done a whole lot for fingerboarding in the US and hopefully people realize that and see that and see that you're not trying to just snatch it and take the US industry like that. You're trying to, you know, build it and bring everybody with us and all of us enjoy the benefits of it. So it's a struggle.
It is definitely a struggle. I should tell them about the season one, the very first stop in Chicago.
Oh, that was a blast.
That was a blast. But here's a crazy funny story that probably 95% of the public doesn't even know. You single-handedly saved the tour.
Huh?
And I'll explain. So we did this at the Doubletree Hotel
in
Chicago. Yeah. We did it season one and season two. We were located in the basement level. And so for people that don't quite understand the logistics of what we're talking about, we have this huge trailer full of parks. We have to park it outside and we have to bring everything in that trailer all the way into the hotel, down a freight elevator, all the way down into the basement. We're talking like a quarter mile walk from the trailer to the venue banquet hall floor.
It was easily a 10-minute trip from the trailer to the room. And that's, and, you know, wheeling everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It was nuts.
It was like... I don't know. It was like escaping, a war through an underground tunnel or something. It was wild, but yeah, it was a lot. Luckily, we were certainly very fortunate to have a number of people to help.
Yeah,
because that first year too, you had like, it wasn't like you just had, you know,
my, it was the first year. Yeah. So it was like, so we didn't know.
So many, like 30, 40, all different shape parks and all this and weights. And like, it was something to behold for sure, to see so many builders represented in that first season was amazing. Obviously the logistics for carrying around 30 plus freaking different design shapes, weight parks is a little much. And I can understand why you changed that. But yeah, the if for anybody who remembers that was has went to that went to any of the first tour stops the first year, for it was a lot of talented builders involved with that first year for sure.
We had so much stuff. And so, like, go back to the story, like, you, your brother Michael, Bryce McNally, and I want to say Cody Mexico was there yep. first year as well.
Yep.
I had zero muscle on my side coming in. So, like, it was me, my wife, my mom. I mean, my mom's obviously, you know, older than I am. And so it's like, that was all the muscle that we brought to Chicago to literally move all of this stuff. So,
before you got there, did you realize it was such a trek to bring all the parts from the trailer all the way to the event room? So, or did you not find that out till you got there?
I knew it was far, but I didn't put two and two together. I was so happy to like have a tour. We're doing it. I got this brand new trailer. It's nice and wrapped and shiny. And like,
yeah,
we're doing a thing. And so like,
the excitement took over.
The excitement took over. Like, we're doing this. But like, no one mentioned, baby.
Yeah, fingerboard. Yeah.
And so like, no one's even mentioned like, hey, like, who's moving this stuff? And I'm like, I didn't bring anybody to move this stuff. And like, some of these parks are heavy, like heavy.
Mine are probably too heavy.
So they're, it wasn't even like, some of these parks aren't that bad, you know, with two people, but when you have to walk like a quarter mile, like stairs and freight, like, I mean, if you guys weren't there, I will state this on the record. I was literally ready. You can ask my wife, like, I'm like, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like, I don't like that stop wore me out so bad. I was ready to cancel like the rest of the tour.
We were definitely tired.
Were exhausted. Like, I went to the hotel. I barely get in the shower. Like, I was so beat up and just like, it was nuts. And so like, a lot of people don't realize, like, if you guys, you, Michael, Cody, Bryce McNally, like, if you guys weren't there to, like, literally help, like, one, we wouldn't even be able to get everything down there and set everything up. It wouldn't have been possible. And so, and then the fact that, like, we had to, like, put it all back in the trailer and stuff after the fact, after we're already beat up, like, I was literally leaving that venue just like, there's just no way, like, you guys saved me.
And at that time you were just like learning and getting used to and figuring out the configuration of the trailer. Mm-hmm. So like it was something
for sure.
It was more than I was expecting on my 18-hour drive to Chicago, which
I'm good so sorry, Lord, but thank you.
I will never, ever drive that far ever again. I will be flying. But, you know, it was a lot cheaper for me and my brother to drive than it was fly, of course, at the time. But I'll never do that again.
No, I appreciate you guys for sure.
It was a lot, I'll have to say. I won't lie. But, man, I just had, like, I'll never forget that trip. It was such a blast.
Such a blast. I made lifelong friendships with that city, for sure. Like,
that's right.
Bryce ended up starting his own event and stuff, basically because he was so inspired by the stuff. Yeah, Coastal Shred, which I ended up making it out that way as well for that.
We went down there as well and had, we went to the same one.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah. I don't think I went to the second one, but.
No, yeah. But it's awesome to have, you know, people so close, and he's not, but I don't know, probably 3 hours away from me, 3 or 4 hours, maybe something like that.
I'm jealous. He lives like right next to the, like, pretty much he could throw a rock and hit the ocean. Like, that's crazy.
Oh, well, so do I. We have 5 area beaches all around us. I can't stand the beach, but I've lived at the beach all my life. But whatever.
It's funny that people that live on the beach don't even do beach stuff.
No, I can't do like, if I'm gonna get drugged to the beach, I'm gonna have a cooler full of beer, my chair, and an umbrella. I'm not getting burnt up, and I'm gonna have something to do while I'm sitting there.
Fair enough. Look at the water.
So, but no, my main thing is the sand. I can't be finding sand 3 weeks later and everything I got. I can't do it. So. But I still get drugged. My wife loves the beach. My girls love the beach.
You can't live that close and not go. So that's a sacrifice of living next to the beach. Poor Dave.
That's all right. That's, you know, you got to make the family happy.
No, facts, for real. That's what makes the world go round. So you got any other hobbies besides fingerboarding, making stuff?
I'm just my original hobby, music. I've done a lot of music in my life, I guess. I've been in a lot of bands and of different kinds, mostly like punk and metal bands. But yeah, and I'd make a lot of music, or I used to make more music with my brother. He raps a bit, so I make like hip hop beats and really all kinds of different beats. So I have a studio here in the house, and need to get back into more of that. Ever since I started building and doing fingerboarding, a lot of the music has taken a back seat. But
Well, I remember you made me a promo video of the competition park, and you had your own music that you produced as the background to it.
Everything
It
that
was
I put
on
on.
point. It was fire.
Everything that I put online, period, has my music behind it. I don't put edits online. I don't put anything that I put on social media, period, has my music behind it.
Ah, see, I didn't know that.
Bands and all, bands or beats or whatever the case is. You go to any one of my pages, all the music throughout everything that's on there is all, stuff that I'm a part of at least. So,
Interesting.
it's not only fingerboarding, it's a little music deal with it. So,
We've got some questions. We've got questions from the internet.
oh, okay.
I know. So we put some feelers out for people to ask Dave Warehouse Rams on our Instagram page, our Facebook page, and our USAFL fan page, which is also on Facebook as well. So we've got a question here from Josh from our USAFL fan page. What's the hardest challenge you faced as a ramp slash park maker?
Hardest challenge. Well, I would say initially it was welding right handrails and stuff, because I had never welded before at all. I had to like crash course myself into it, and so that was I'm still not that great at it, to be honest. But I can make a rail that won't come apart, so that's good. But I would say as far as, but that's just a minor thing. So, but I would say as far as carpentry and stuff like that, one of the hardest things I've built was a recent build. Actually, I did a replica of the Bissos waves in Barcelona. And so I had to learn how to do what they call kerf cutting, and which allows you to bend a half inch piece of plywood. To all kinds of things. And so that was one of the hardest things that I've learned through carpentry, I would say. That and cutting boards for the faces of kickers, the point at the end of the top board, to get that at a good angle and sharp enough that the ride onto these ramps is not bumpy. It's just butter all the way up. And I would say that was difficult at first. I had to learn how to make the proper kind of jig. There's a couple ways you can do that. I use a jig and do it on the table saw vertically. But the most interesting and thing that I've learned in doing carpentry, and the hardest was definitely the whole kerf cutting thing, and learning how to make that work, learning the dimensions of the kerfs, how thick to make them, how close, all that stuff. I did a lot of trial and error at first, trying to get it to curve at the right angles and stuff that I needed for that park. And so yeah, it was a lot of learning. I was on YouTube a whole lot learning how to do that stuff, and I'm definitely proud I know how to do that now. So, which will possibly lead to wood, quarters and wood, curved ramps in general. I haven't done really much of that up until this point. One, because of course you can always get a steam box and you can steam pieces of wood and bend them and all that, but I just never really got into that. I always. At first I'd always put metal faces on them, on the quarters and stuff. And once I did it once, I loved it. Like the sound of it is just, it sounds so industrial. And not to mention it's just easier. I don't have to do any jig cut on the end of the board, cause it's, you know, 23 or 4 gauge metal. So it's plenty thin enough to roll on. And so, you know, I may make some wood core. I've done a few, but I don't know. The whole metal face on the wood body kind of quarter is a little bit warehouse rampsish, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
Well, it's definitely got its own brand and style for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, I would say that was one of the hardest things, though. Definitely. Kerf cutting. Look it up.
Kerf cutting. I like how, man, it's so insightful having this interview, the / podcast, / whatever we are having right now. This is awesome. The next question from the internet, which I've gotten the same question for days. We're talking Facebook, Instagram, fan page. Everybody's asking the same thing, basically. And they are asking, when are you coming out of retirement? When can people pick up their next piece?
Oh, goodness.
I know. You knew this was coming at some point. Like, you knew this conversation was coming.
Well, I mean, I've never quit building, period. Even when I stopped selling stuff and whatever, I've built all the whole time. You know, I've been building like crazy for this event coming up at the end of September. So it's that's never stopped. My plan is to get through this event and get through that. I've got a couple of sponsorships I got to fulfill. And you know, maybe by towards the end of this year, beginning of next, my plan is to bring warehouse ramps back. I'm not sure exactly the capacity I'm going to do it in. I don't know that I'm going to be taking custom orders again. When I had to stop in February, you know, part of the issue was just being overwhelmed. It is just so, you know, my build list got to be 6 months out and I'm but one person, you know, trying at that time to run a business, like a legit business, and then do this on the side. And it was a lot, you know. And but I always tried to be personable. Everybody I built for, I had extensive conversations with, exactly what they're looking for and all that. So it was a lot. It was a lot involved with that. And I don't know that I'm going to necessarily do custom work again. Probably what I'll do, at least to get my feet wet and come back with it, is build a bunch of one-of-one, you know, obstacles and thing like that. And what I like to use and then sell those in a big drop, I guess, something like that. I really have never been a fan of the whole drop thing. I can understand why. I can understand why, because a lot of these builders, it's just one guy. He's in his garage, mm-hmm. or something. And you know, if you got to work on Monday, but you just got an order for like, you know, 30 boards or something, you know, if you're a board maker or whatever the case may be. And, it's overwhelming. It's hard. Overwhelming. It's hard, you know, cause you want to fulfill that because you love this community. You want to, you know, everybody would love to, all the builders of whatever they're building would love to do this full time. All of us, you know, we all love this, mm-hmm. but there's real life, you know, there's mortgage, yeah. there's electricity bill and you know, healthcare and all that crap. And, so.
Yeah. I've noticed that a lot of people are doing drops. Basically what they're doing, if you're like a deck maker, you know, you're making, you know, you're building up to 10 decks and then you just do a drop.
And I can understand why, you know, mm-hmm. they build them on their own time, mm-hmm. and they're not promising anything to anybody. And then they put them out there. My only thing is, you know, with that is, it lessens the chances for somebody who really likes what you provide, but perhaps isn't, you know, the quickest with their checkout on their, you know, on your page or something like that. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people just don't ever get the chance to try some people's products because of that, unfortunately. Yeah. You know, and that would be a reason that I wouldn't want to do a drops or whatever in general, but
sometimes they're just inevitable.
Sometimes, you know, it's you can't swim upstream.
Yeah. And that goes back to the whole supply and demand, like the you know, the community is getting larger and larger every single year.
But
the suppliers are still the same. There's still the same amount of suppliers, basically. There may be, you know, a few new companies here and there, but not enough to, you know, obviously supply everybody in the community with what they're looking for. And so it becomes an issue.
It's difficult. And, you know, that's, and back to, you know, before with me building, that was a lot of the issue, to be honest. It was just too much. You know, it seems like every other day I had somebody coming at me, you know, wanting to get on the build list. And, you know, when I quit, my build list was like, I don't know, 30 head or something, all wanting individual custom made obstacles, you know, which put me out building like 6 months or something. And it got to be to a point where every time I was at my shop, it wasn't for me to enjoy what I love doing. It was me trying to fulfill orders and be a business with it when this business wasn't paying my bills. It wasn't what my main focus needed to be, essentially. And it was taking way too much of my time. It was taking me away from my family, taking me away from my business, my paint business, and just taking too much of it. So, that's part of, you know, there's other reasons, but that was part of why I had to stop in February. So I want to be careful when I come back. I want to be careful to do it on my own terms, and still do it in a manner that I can keep my love for fingerboarding alive and not sour and not get overwhelmed, you know? So my plan is certainly to come back. Absolutely. Warehouse Ramps will be coming back. It's just a matter of how that picture looks when I do. But, you know, regardless, I've never stopped communicating with people. Anybody online, if you message me, I'm going to message you back, you know, pretty much. You know, I don't, I'm not one of these companies that, you know, they just never check their messages on, say, Instagram, because it's too much or overwhelming or whatnot. You know, I can imagine, on the other hand, you know, Mike Schneider is not answering every message because it's just too damn many.
It's overwhelming. Even for me on tour, like, I answered all of the platforms, it consumed my life. Like, I was literally on Instagram and stuff like that 3 or 4 hours a day, just dedicated to responding back to questions, posts, likes, shares, all that crazy stuff. And it's overwhelming for sure.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I can certainly understand why there's companies, you know, why the majority of the companies, you know, do drops like that. You know, a Woob is a good example, you know, one of the most sought after decks in the world. You know, but that guy, I think his name is Zach. No.
I'm actually not quite sure.
I'm not quite sure either, but regardless, you know, he makes a very sought after deck, of course. And, you know, we won't even get into the aftermarket prices, but, you know, he sells them for a normal price on his deal, but he has such small drops and stuff. So he's, from what I can tell, has gotten to the point where he got way overwhelmed. And at some point in the evolution of Woob, he decided that that's enough. And I'm going to build decks for me and my friends, and I'll sell some here and there, and I'm going to keep my love for what I do. So that's, you know, certainly respectable. At the same time, you know, I want a Woob, but I can't get one. I've tried.
It's hard.
You know, it's hard. It's, you know, it is what it is. And you can say that about a whole lot of companies out there. They've given up on trying to please everybody and, you know, have to remain real with themselves to to stay doing it, to keep loving it, to keep having their heart involved. They're involved with it. Cause you know, large groups of people can certainly take that from you.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Take your drive out of doing it. So, I don't know. I know I definitely want to come back. I love the community. I love fingerboarding, and I want to bring it back in a big way. But I have to be careful on how I bring it back and what is right for me and my family, and and just determine on what level that I can bring it back and it not take over, it not encompass my life like it was, 6 months plus ago. So,
well, that's what happened with me. I started off as curved fingerboards before I was USAFBL. I was going to make decks and stuff like that, just like a lot of people, and then quickly realized that I can't fingerboard and make decks at the same time. And so if I'm spending 2-3 hours making decks, that's 2-3 hours that I'm not spending fingerboarding. And then I quickly realized, like, the more successful, which, I mean, I never really produced an actual deck. I'm still, like, going through the process and stuff, but, like, just going through the journey, learning, like, all the ins and outs stuff of it, like, I quickly realized, like, I can't dedicate time to actually fingerboarding if I'm also dedicating time to making decks. And so shout out to like all the deck makers, shout out to anybody who's making products, period, because you guys are sacrificing valuable fingerboarding time to produce a product for the community.
And that's just it. They shouldn't. They mm-hmm. should be dedicating time to remembering why they love what they do. Mm-hmm. They should be dedicating to, like, I have specific time at night or something. I don't build, late at night. Obviously I got neighbors and can't be cutting and all that stuff, but so I have specific times that I go out to my little shop in the backyard. And well, I've got it in the backyard now in my house instead of in Wilmington, but you got to keep with it. I think making edits helps you stay in that vein. Mm-hmm. Continue to make little spots and little edits and different things like that. But it is hard because you're struggling with the same want and desire to have your business grow bigger and bigger. And, a lot of us eventually, I would love to have warehouse ramps pay all my bills. That'd be amazing. Mm-hmm. But I believe if I were to do that to that point and get all the way to where it's paying my mortgage and all that stuff, it's going to turn into a real job that it's taking away my desire to want a fingerboard anymore, to be honest. Well,
that's why I went the event route with like USAFBL, so that I can still fingerboard, hang out with the homies, and still do what I love all at the same time. And so,
but that's hard for a host of a large event to be.
It is. And I'm still trying to figure out how to manage that better. But I feel that, being around other like-minded people is way better than me being in my house and my garage, like, by myself. Oh, yeah. Kind of doing, yeah, that. And so
one left to his own devices is often when things go awry. So, community, again, support community, mm-hmm. all of that, is helpful to fingerboarders and builders alike. It's crucial. It's crucial to this niche community for sure.
Definitely. Speaking of events and stuff that is just going on, I mean, we managed to go this far and not once mentioned what's going on September 23rd.
So we are, my boy Alex is throwing this event at his warehouse out on Highway 421. Not that many people know what that is, but it's a highway just outside of Wilmington. His warehouse is 4 or 5 times bigger than mine was. He's got a lot of space, and we're throwing a big old event September 23rd. From what I understand, or from what I've accumulated, there's, I don't know, several companies like coming themselves now. We're going to have 25 plus parks, half of which I made. There's probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 different parks you've not even seen before in person, Levon. There's a lot going on, a lot going on. We have, I don't know what it was, like almost 60 sponsors, which I will have to say to all of you, I am blown away. I'm really blown away, truly. Me and Alex were talking, and Marcus, me and Alex and Marcus are kind of orchestrating all this. And we were talking the best way to let people know what's going on. And so, obviously we decided to use the Warehouse Ramps page because it has a lot of reach, and use what you got kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people mistakenly, I guess, think that I'm throwing the event, which I am part of the group throwing the event, but Alex is actually the host, and this is his event, and I'm a sponsor, and I'm helping organize, essentially. Marcus is bravely receiving all of these packages that people are sending.
Yeah, I just sent him one out last week, and I was also a Navy influence too, that an event hosted by you, and so
mm-hmm. No, and so I'm just glad one you of the cleared sponsors. That up. I'm just one of the sponsors. I of course have a huge part of it. Half the parks that are going to be there are mine, but or not mine ownership wise, but that mm-hmm. I made. Alex actually owns more warehouse parks than I own now.
Alex has more parks.
Yeah, he owns the majority of the warehouse parks in that warehouse, including the new mega street park that I'm nearing finishing. It's a whopper. I've not built anything quite this big. It's 3.5 feet by 12 feet. The whole park is in two different tables that have to roll together and lock together, because I can't make a 12-foot table and expect to be able to transfer it to places. So, but this one is a full street. It's like the street style park on crack. Straight up, it's got dual kink rails on it. Of course, I try to get more abstract with my designs and stuff. A little more like Black River or some of these other park makers, and somehow end up making more symmetrical things. Because I'm thinking of. I always try to, left-handers or mm-hmm. or people that really love Switch or whatever the case may be. So, the 90% of this park is symmetrical, but there's two, one end of it has two different obstacles that are not gotcha. Anywhere else in the park. So, but this one's going to be big and bad. If you come to the event, you'll walk in and you'll be like, holy crap, the thing is huge. I might have made it too big. I'm not sure yet. I've yet to even put it all together and see it all as one, because I'm not done building it. But it is massive. It is massive. So whoever competes in the street competition will have all kinds of options. So
yeah, so kind of explain what all we got going on. I know that there's like music and food and some other stuff. Yeah. Like, kind of go over some of the deets as far as what's going on with the event.
Sure. So, of course, we're having a full competition. We'll do the vert and a street course and game escape. Pretty standard. We are going to have a limited amount of spots available. So, obviously we're doing this, the whole event is from 12 to 6. So we've got 6 hours to fit everything in. And, so we have to be careful about how many people we let, compete, because we can't get through the whole thing if there's too many people compete. So there's limited spots for all of it. More so game of skate than the street competition or vert. We can squeeze a man or two in here and there. But obviously, as you well know, a game of skate is a specified number of people, so the bracket works out correct. So we'll have that going on. We plan to have full electronics. Like, we'll have somebody filming as they're competing, and we'll have a big, huge, like, screen to live. So all the whole crowd all around everybody, you won't have to like try to like get in a spot to see. Everybody will be able to see fully.
That's pretty cool. Event.
Yeah. So I've already got a guy who said he would come and take care of all of that. And so that part is going to be pretty cool. We got two bands playing. One is Rocket 77 and the other one is Mucky Knife Fight. We did have Good Grief playing, which is another local punk band. They had to pull out because they lost a bass player. But I was fortunate to find another band. Rocket 77's taken over that spot. Good local punk music. And then we also have we're gonna have three food trucks. I've secured a taco truck, and I've secured a sweets truck, you know, type like ice, you know, flavored ice and ice cream and different things. And working on securing a burger truck, which shouldn't be too difficult. So we'll have plenty of eating options there. You know, don't eat lunch before you come support the food trucks. It's just going to be a blast, man. It's going to be a blast. It's free entry. There will be a charge to enter the competitions or raffle tickets. Also, we're holding a raffle. As you can imagine, with 60-something sponsors, we are going to have a bus load of crap to give away. Oh, my God.
I was going to say, event has a ridiculously – I don't even think I have that many sponsors for, like, the entire tour. So that's a
Well, that's what I was saying before.
That's a lot.
I'm so thankful for all the sponsors and how much I'm, you know, they started coming in and people started saying yes and all that. And I'm blown away that I even had that much reach, to be quite honest. I didn't think so.
I think it's because like a lot of people have seen your parks from my tour for 3 years. And so I think that the exposure of the tour has definitely helped that out for sure.
Without a doubt. Without the exposure, the tour has helped everybody, period. If they say that they're not benefiting from the tour, U.S. tour, and they're a builder in the U.S. period, then you're not being truthful to yourself for sure. The tour has benefited all of us in the fingerboarding community, fingerboarder and builder alike. So without a doubt, yeah, for sure, man.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited for this event. I am trying to get some last minute details with my job so I can figure out if I'm coming the morning of, or if I'm making it like a weekend thing. So gotcha. I am working on making my way out there.
Anybody coming? We got 5 area beaches. You can bring the family, do a whole vacation thing out of it. We are a tourist destination. There's, you know, plenty to do other than fingerboarding, you know, because that's just for 6 hours one of the days. So there's a lot of stuff to do here. You know, a lot of people would have a hard time explaining to their wife or girl or husband that they want to travel hours on end for fingerboarding. But it's a lot easier to say, hey, let's take a vacation in Wilmington. By the way, I'm also going to do this on Saturday. You know, it's that may help some people. But
blessed for my wife and knowing that, like, you know, this is just what we do, and super supportive.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt, very fortunate to have the support that I have. So, but it's going to be a crazy, crazy event. You know, if we expect 200 plus from what you know, just from my conversations with people and like the amount of actual sponsors that are coming, it's going to be something.
It'll be pretty big. I don't want to like name drop, but I mean, there's probably 10 or 15 people that are driving a minimum of 2 states away just to come to this event. Like, I know a couple people out in the Tennessee area, a couple people out in Georgia, myself included. Like, there's some people that are trekking it pretty far to come out. So I know it's going to be a banger.
Yeah, the Yuck crew is coming up from Florida. I forgot
about them. Yeah.
We got Benny.
Good vibes.
He's coming. Okay. So we've got a lot of sponsors and stuff coming. It's gonna be something else, without a doubt. If we do pull 200 fully, then it would be a good success. If we pull 300 something plus, like, next year is gonna be like rendezvous-esque type big. At least that's what we hope, and that's our plan.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we get more events like that on that scale, that, you know, we're not all just looking forward to, you know, one or two flat face events a year type of thing, where, you know, you got the tour, you got rendezvous, mm-hmm. hopefully, you know, you got the next, like, Alex Warehouse Ramps, like, type collaboration thing going on and stuff like
Carolina
that.
Carolina Fingerboard Jam.
Yeah, like, I want year. More things to look like. I want there to be, like the dream for me is to just be able to sit back and be like, I can't go to this event over here because there's an event over there that's over there. Like, exactly. You're, like, picking and choosing now, like, how you spend your weekends. Like, I want to get to that point.
Well, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people, for example, live in California. You know, it's kind of unattainable for most people to travel all the way to New Jersey.
Yeah.
So for the rendezvous. So, and for the South as well, you know, down here where we're at. So, I certainly encourage everybody to do more events and bigger, because the mm-hmm. more rendezvous size events that we have spread across the country, we will have way more exposure to fingerboarding, and those that are those solo fingerboarders in their room will have a lot more access to people in real life in the hobby that they love.
Yeah.
So.
No, I agree 100%. Is there anything that we are missing? I feel like we talked about a lot.
Yeah, we went through quite a bit. Going through this little list.
For you guys that have made it this far on our Patreon, I appreciate everybody who subscribed to our Patreon. If you're catching this early before the release, mm-hmm. I thank you. For you guys as well, give us a like, a share, and a follow if you're watching this on our YouTube channel. And don't forget to subscribe. I know, Dave, I know you got some crazy shout outs.
Well, definitely. Shout out to, again, our gracious host, Mr. Alex Nugent, and our boy, Marcus Kramer. Both of them have kept me involved with fingerboarding, to be quite honest. Them and the rest of our crew. If I didn't have those guys around, I probably would have moved on, to be quite honest. So shout out to all my boys here. Shout out to friends in the industry, of course. Cody with Unlimited, Mike Tucker with Milk, there's a lot. So shout out to my bro for teaching me some carpentry skills. Still learning, but and shout out to USAFBO, because we all better off for it, that's for sure.
I appreciate that. All right, I guess until next time,
thank you much, Vine. Take care, bud.
All right, take it easy, guys.